You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Out there on a Wednesday. See things that you know are blatantly wrong, like it's the 75th anniversary. These events commemorate the invasion of Normandy, which occurred tomorrow. But you see people that really aren't familiar with their history saying things that like it was today or yesterday, and you wish they would do a little reading. So welcome on a Wednesday up to Camp Wilson at 29 Palms and back last night. And that's, you know, for me, right? I never thought I'd go back to Camp Wilson. What the hell, man? So for those of you who don't know, Camp Wilson is the place. I wonder who it's named for, if it's named for the Commandant, Lew Wilson. That would be interesting to find out, wouldn't it? So, but anyway, when you go to 29 Palms and you're not stationed there, right? You go there and you're going to be there for a month, a couple weeks, whatever you're doing out there. You go live at a camp called Camp Wilson. Now, it used to be sheet metal A-frames. Yeah, this is how chintzy the Marine Corps was. When I went there the first time, they were sheet metal A-frames. Okay, so you're talking plywood and sheet metal. So the rain falls, right to the sides, and it runs down. And there was the sand was the floor. There was no flooring. So, so now the first time I went there was in 1985. And, so went back out there last night as the guest of the 25th Marine Regiment. And I have some pictures that I'll put up, that are really cool because over 1,000 Marines there. And, you know, God bless them. They have a lot of shit to do. They just arrived within the last 48 hours. And they're a busy group. And, you know, they showed up last night. They had heard good things about it. And I tried to do it as fast as I could because I knew it had been a long day for them. And they were extremely gracious. So just to all the Marines out there who sat through that, who I know aren't listening right now, they're doing other things, but ultimately might. Thank you for your graciousness last night. After a long day, some of them sitting on the floor, some of them standing. Go change somebody's life. Armed with post-traumatic winning and the wisdom that comes out of our culture, make those 2 hours count. And I know it was at the end of a long day, but I certainly appreciate your hanging in there with me and just to Colonel Dunn and Sergeant Major and the people that made it happen, a Lieutenant Colonel by the name of, Rosenstein, JR, if you will, but, who all, you know, and so, it was awesome. But again, the first time I went there was in 1985. So you go out there again. And then I was stationed there in 1992 to 94, when I was company commander. And then my daughter Catherine's born out there. My son John stationed there, he and his wife, and my grandson. My grandson was born out there. So yeah, we do 29 Palms. So, but to go back out there again, I have all these things in my life where I've said, well, I'll never go back there again. And then now I'm back there again. And so, going out there was fun. Chow Hall they have is really nice. I hadn't been to Chow Hall. When we went to Afghanistan in 2010, we never went to Camp Wilson. We went out and did stuff and then we came back and we never went to Camp Wilson. So, the food that we had, they brought it to us out in the field. So the Chow Hall is a nice Chow Hall. It's a giant Quonset hut. So you might be able to, I don't know, the roof might be 50 feet tall and might seat a couple thousand Marines. So, and the support for the tables, those supports are concrete. You can't move them. That's right. How do you keep Marines from screwing with shit? You make it too heavy. Yeah, that's how you do it. So that's what they did. But anyway, it's just funny, right? So you got to 29 Palms early because you have a choice. You can leave at 2-something, right, and miss the traffic, or you can leave and sit in traffic and in Riverside and all throughout the Los Angeles basin as you try to get out of greater Los Angeles and Orange County. And so I did the smart thing. I left early. So, anyway, got to the PX, walked around a little bit, and, Marine Corps, I mean, facility's pretty nice. You know, the Marine Corps, one thing that if you haven't been on a Marine base in a while, you'd go there and you'd say, wow. Yeah, and it's all the money that was pumped into the DOD during the wars, and, you know, the facilities are nicer. Then we go out to Wilson, and I'm always a stickler for getting to a venue early. And so we only have one speaker, and we only have one screen, and it's not that big of a screen. And so I was like, uh-oh. But turn the volume up as loud as you can. Did not have a stage, so they said, well, do you need a stage? I said, well, you know, most Marines do two things that I won't say irritate me, but they say, I don't need a microphone. And then the people in the back are going, what's he saying? What's he saying? And then the other thing is that I don't want to be on a stage. Well, there's a reason when people perform that they're on stages, and it's so everybody can see. Well, okay. And so you can hold their attention if you can do something like that. So anyway, we put, for those of you that have been in Chow Halls and expeditionary things, you've seen kind of stainless steel long tables, maybe 6 foot by, Actually, I tell you they're longer than that. Probably 10 feet by 2 feet, 3 feet. So we shoved three of those together, and that was a, that was the, I love this shit, right? Expeditionary stuff. That was the table. I'm sorry, that was the podium. No, that was the stage. And then I took the three boxes of potato chips, made that the podium. So it was like straight up expeditionary. So it was cool. But I'll post some of the pictures that JR took, and you'll get a chance to see. And so it was cool. And then drove back last night late to get back here to Jack and Joe, so Joe would not destroy my house, which is important to me at least. So anyway, good morning to you. And we'll talk today a little bit about the presentation. And it's always interesting to me, especially about the reserves, because my first experience with the reserves came when I was a company commander. And I got told that, hey, Mac, you're going to go out and support, whether they were doing a CAX during the summer or something, I can't really remember. But they said, you're going to be in, and they liked to send me out there because I was squared away and I had a good company. And, so they knew I wouldn't screw it up. And, yeah, and they knew nobody was going to get embarrassed. So we'd go out there, and we always had, and there's a tendency when you're on active duty to go, oh, reservist. And that is prevalent throughout the Marine Corps. Dare I say throughout the military. Well, my first experience, I go to meet, I want to say it was the 81 section from, I can't remember which battalion for the life of me. And so, I go to meet the lieutenant, captain, I think it was, and then his section leaders. And I was blown away. Yeah, straight up blown away. And what I learned was, I mean, these guys have like careers and shit, right? So it was different from the Marine Corps that I knew. They were more professional. They had done stuff, in real life. And there was a confidence about them. And they were there because they wanted to be there. And so I was totally blown away by it. I came back and I looked at my NCOs and I said, why can't you be like those guys? And they were like, come on, sir. Why are you dogging us out? That dude's way older than we are. And, but it was just different. It was just different. And I came away so impressed. And I don't know what I expected, but the reserves were not what I expected. And so the Marines were good and they were motivated. And so it was a great experience. And then since that time, I've served with them in Iraq. I've served with them in Afghanistan. Hell, I am one. And every time I deployed, I came out of the reserves, to deploy. And, but my reserve experience was different. It was, in fact, I'll tell you, it's funny. So I'm like completely out of the Marine Corps. And Paul Kennedy and Dave Furness are doing plans for the 1st Marine Division for General Mattis. And they send me an email. And they said, hey, man, are you still in the Marine Corps? Because we could use some help. We're getting a bunch of reservists, and we'd love to have you. And so, and for those of you who heard the story, I won't bore everybody with it. But long story short, I had to go through this process to get reappointed. It took about a year for that to happen. So they contact me in the fall of 2002 before they go to Iraq. By the time I get reappointed, the war is over. The march up is over and they're scheduled to come home. So I just sent them an email. Hey, for what it's worth, they said, don't do anything. We just got told we're going back. You'll go back with us. Okay. So that's how I go to, but every time I go, I'm a by name request out of what's known as the inactive ready reserve, the IRR. Now that's when you're not part of any kind of drilling unit. you fall. I mean, it's the pool that if you're not part of an active reserve unit, if you have no other affiliation, you drop into the pool known as the IRR, where you don't do anything. So anyway, that's what I got put into. So I go to Iraq, I come home, and I figure I'm done. So I go back into the IRR. Colonel Nicholson calls me and says, you want to go to, I could use your help. I need grown-ups. Will you go to Fallujah with 5th Marine Regiment? So I go again. I come home. I'm like, all right, well, that's the last time I'm doing that. This thing's going to wind down and blah, 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 blah. And I'd just been elected to public office and whatnot. So anyhow, Dave Furness calls me in 2009. Hey, man, if I take over RCT-1, will you go to Helmand with me? So every time, my experience was unique because I didn't drill as a reservist. I only participated in the Marine Corps as an active duty Marine, but I came out of the reserve every time. So reserves, they're my people. And I'll tell you a funny story. In Afghanistan, you know, people would bitch about a reserve unit or reserve guy. So somebody comes in and Napa man is a reservist too. Now, I don't want to blow our trumpets too loud, but Napa man, pretty good officer, really good officer. And I'm no slouch either. So somebody would come in and they'd start bitching about, say something about reservists. And I'd turn around. I'm like, what are you fucking talking about, man? I'm a reservist. And they're like, oh, Mac, you know, blah, 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 blah. And they'd look at Luke and they're like, Luke, you know what I'm talking about. And he would look at him and say, I'm a reservist too. And I'd say, so get the fuck out of here, man. You're messing around reserve country. We're locking. The only reason this regiment is locked on is because of us two reservists. We lock it on every day. That's right. Boom, bitch, get out of here. So, you would want to be around for that because that shit was funny. And all the Marines laughing, like, holy shit. How do we get away from this? The answer, you can't. So no, I mean, my experience with reservists, and let me just tell you where reserve struggles is not with the Marines. The Marines are good. Marines, I mean, you bring them back, you train them. I mean, they have NCOs that have done all kinds of stuff. It's really interesting. And now they're professional guys. And so they're, like I said, they're a little bit different. They're dare I say, more grown up. Yeah, it hasn't been the Marine Corps. They're broader. So they're always an interesting group to be around. A Marine comes up as he's walking out last night. He shakes my hand. He said, hey, sir, my wife's a clinical psychiatrist. This was awesome. Thank you. And he's like a corporal, right? Well, that tends not to happen on active duty, right? Tends not to happen. So anyhow, where the reserve tends to struggle is with officers and staff NCOs. Because what they'll do in the reserve is in order to fill a billet, they'll take somebody, you know, with maybe kind of sort of that experience, but not really. And they put them in there. So they tend to, where Marines reserve units tend to struggle is at the staff level, right? Is at the staff level. And those guys can get up to snuff pretty quick if they can, you know, if they can, when they show up someplace, if they can understudy someplace, somebody for a while. But normally, you know, it's a shock. When people like, I'm the S4, I've never been an S4. Hell, I'm not even a logistician. I'm a grunt. Right? Or you have a planner that's never really planned a whole lot. And so that's where the reserves tend to struggle. The Marines are awesome. But anyway, a huge thank you last night to Colonel Dunn and his crew, who's out at 29 Palms for the next month. And, just an honor. And let me just tell you, so you get up on this ghetto ass podium. Or on the podium. You get up on this ghetto ass stage that we put together. The podium is three boxes of potato chips. And Marines sitting on the benches, you know, the tables, the concrete benches and tables and stuff. And, you know, some are sitting on the floor and some are standing off the side, and you're just like, this is awesome. This is the way this should be, right? This is the way this should be. Post-traumatic winning should be. So anyway, a huge thanks to them today, for last night. And I've got to find a way to make it a version of post-traumatic winning shorter, because I knew that it had been a long day, and I tried to go as fast as I could. But the material's important, and so I felt bad because I was rushing through it, and I normally don't do that. And so, but it was a long day for them. But anyway, Jolynn Lee is the Marine Corps Spouse of the Year, as recognized by Armed Forces Insurance in their Military Spouse Program. So we're going to talk to her today about post-traumatic winning. So you're going to learn about her. She's an interesting woman. So you'll learn about her, and then you're going to hear about, you know, what she expected when she showed up and watched post-traumatic winning, her perspective of it as a spouse, which is always interesting. And so you're going to meet her. So it's the second interview we'll do in a series called it's called Spouses React. And so you'll hear from her in about 39 and 5 is 44 minutes. So we'll do that today. And then tomorrow you'll hear the Lynch and Kenny event. And so they'll join me. And so it goes. I think Grant Newsham's going to join us on Monday. So you'll hear from him. And got word that we're going to be able to interview United States Representative, former Marine, Seth Moulton, who's a candidate for President of the United States. So we'll do that probably next week sometime, and then a little earlier the following Monday. Yeah, fired up about that. So Katie Beasley, 2/3 of the earth is covered by water. The other third, covered by Katie Beasley. That's right, the whirling dervish. Anyway, good morning to you on this Wednesday morning. The United States Marine Corps band makes it official. Dedicated to the Marines of the 25th Marine Regiment out at 29 Palms right now. The storied 25th Marine Regiment who went ashore on Iwo Jima, who's fought in every conflict. And I told them last night, hey, Marine Corps doesn't go to war without you guys. Just know that. Right? We do not go to war with only our active duty regiments and battalions. And they have fought in every war that the Marine Corps has participated in. And they have a great history and lineage. And after a long day, thank you for your courtesy last night and for paying attention. It is important stuff. And it was awesome spending a couple hours with you, dedicated to you.
About to play the trial of the United States of America. You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me. I'm a poor veteran or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show things.
Is Jack Riley the best or what? I love this dude.
Well, but, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
We got to win. It's the door number 4 crew, all right? We rejected serving with the smart people. We rejected seeing the world, right? We chose the more difficult option, right? Oh, no, 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 no. I want that one. Yeah, that's the Marine Corps. Everybody got a chip on their shoulder looking to prove something? That's the Marine Corps. Yeah, and we got to win. It's important. It's important to us. That's why we joined. All right. Currently, it is cloudy in 75 in Quantico. It is cloudy in 82 at Camp Lejeune. Sunny and already 84 degrees in 29 Palms. It means it's going to be warm. When I got there yesterday at about 5:30, it was 97 degrees. But you know, I mean, it was a dry 97. Yeah, there we go. Let me tell you, but that's different than a wet 97. You get a wet 97, I think feels like 130, man. So there is something to, it's really hot, but it's dry. There is something to that. I goof on it sometimes. Like when it's 135 degrees, but it's a dry 135. Yeah, that's a little much. Somebody needs to turn that shit down. So, yeah, sunny in 84, which means it's going to be warm in 29 Palms today. Cloudy in 62 at Camp Pendleton in Hawaii, Camp Smith. Dark cloudy in 76 in Okinawa. Clear, dark in 79 in the Al Anbar province of Iraq. It is cloudy and 105 degrees late in the day. In the Helmand province of Afghanistan, home of Dale Alford and the Marines of Task Force Southwest, it is clear, dark, and 88 degrees. At the home of All Marine Radio, beautiful Southern California, it is cloudy and 62. Looking for a high of 72 today under partly sunny skies. 72 tomorrow with a 10% chance of rain? What the hell is that? And on Friday, partly sunny and 71 with its 10% chance of rain. Okay, I don't know what the hell's going on, but that ain't right. That ain't right. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll check news headlines. Jolyn Lee, Marine Corps Spouse of the Year, according to Armed Forces Insurance. And we're going to talk to her about her life and that award. And then she's going to come on and talk about post-traumatic winning. And she saw it and her thoughts on it. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio. Coming up next on your home for it on a Wednesday, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Mac, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good. But I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good. But I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good, But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I wanna walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope and soak in the ache of this heartbreak. I wanna drive fast till I break down in nowhere, so I can finally cry these tears when I reach there. I scream, yeah.
One of the other cool things whenever I do this now is that Marines know my kids. they came up and say, "Hey, sir, I served with your son John, or I served with your son Patrick. Do you have a son named Patrick?" "Yeah, he belonged to me. I know him. I served with him." I'm like, "Oh, really? I'm surprised you survived." Yeah, so that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. And then, you know, Marines come up and, you know, say they listen to the podcast and, you know friends of mine. And, it's an awesome experience. So as you can tell, I'm still not over it. But the look of it was, this is how post-traumatic winning should be given, right? Someplace expeditionary. Boxes, not podiums, right? Marines in desert utilities, going someplace, getting ready to do something. Motivating. So, anyhow. Peyton Davis. And the message is, man, we're all living through it. Right? When I hear this commercial, you know what I think about? See you, Peyton.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good.
It's out of post-traumatic winning. Hey, talk to somebody, man. What you're going through is not as unique as you think it is. You are struggling with the same thing that just about everybody else in the room struggled with, and it is, how do I deal with this shit that will not go away and fucks me up? How do I do that? And I don't know, we need to be better at trauma mentorship. We need to be better at understanding that this happens, that all of us go through it. And you're not unique if you're struggling with it. You know, you are not unique if you're struggling with it. So don't be afraid to talk to people, man. Do not be afraid to talk to people. And once you begin to talk about it, your life will change, right? You're not in that self-imposed prison. And that is one of the, you know, that is one of the biggest, things that you do when we talk about this, is don't be afraid to talk about it. And then all of a sudden, somebody talks about it, and they begin to unburden themselves, and oh my God. And then all of a sudden, there isn't a need for this desire to go to therapy anymore, because, nah, I'm okay. I talked to so-and-so, and, you know, or maybe there is still a desire to go to see a therapist. But, you know, getting people over this, my story is so unique, nobody else can understand. You know what? It really isn't. It really isn't. Your story is pretty much like his story that's pretty much like her story, and it's not as bad as their story, you know. So whenever I hear that commercial, I think of that. I want to talk about D-Day a little bit, all right? D-Day. Some basic facts. The belligerent was Germany. People who participated in it, the British Empire, the United States, Canada, Australia, Czechoslovakia, France, Norway, and Poland. Units that were there on American units on Omaha Beach. The 5th Corps was on Omaha Beach, which was the Big Red One, the 1st Infantry Division, and the 29th Infantry Division. And that was on Omaha Beach. On Utah Beach, the 7th Corps, the 4th Infantry Division, the 82nd Airborne Division, the 90th Infantry Division, and the 101st Airborne Division. The Brits were at Gold Beach, at Juno Beach, and at Sword Beach. Now, I know the Canadians were in there, but they're not listed. Total strength of the Allies going ashore that day, 156,000. Total strength of the Germans along the coast was 50,000. So that better than a 3-1 advantage, which is, in the old way of doing things, that was important. Alright. And then, 170 coastal artillery guns, ranging from 100 millimeters to 210 millimeters, as well as 320 millimeter rocket launchers. Casualties on the American side. 10,000 plus casualties. 4,414 were killed in action, and the balance, so about 5,600 wounded in action during the actual going ashore event. 185 M4 Sherman tanks were destroyed as we went ashore. German losses were approximately 20%, between 4,000 and 9,000 of the 50,000 German soldiers that were there. Took place on a Tuesday, June 6, 1944. Codename Operation Neptune. Landing start with the 24,000 U.S., British, and Canadian airborne troops dropping shortly after midnight. Landing took place on the coast at 0630 along 50-mile stretch of beach. Did not achieve their first day objective. So, anyway, that anniversary happens tomorrow at 6:30. Today, they're everybody in the coastal town of Portsmouth. And, I'm sorry. Portsmouth. Do they say it's Portsmouth? P-O-R-T-S-M-O-U-T-A. Portsmouth. I've heard of Portsmouth. Anyway, maybe that's a Brit thing. Anyway, which is where everybody embarked on shipping from. So when you read the stories of the civilians in the area who heard trucks go by hour after hour after hour after hour after hour, like they knew it was on. How the Germans wouldn't know, I'm not exactly sure. Right? When you see all the ships assembling. How about weather? The invasion planners determined a set of conditions involving the phase of the moon, the tides, and the time of day that would be satisfactory on only a few days each month. A full moon was desirable, as it would provide illumination for aircraft pilots and have the highest tides. The Allies wanted to schedule the landings for shortly before dawn, midway between low and high tide, with the tide coming in. This would improve the visibility of the obstacles on the beach while minimizing the amount of time the men would be exposed in the open. Eisenhower had tentatively scheduled the 5th of June as a day for the assault. However, on 4 June, conditions were unsuitable for a landing. High winds, heavy seas made it impossible to launch landing craft, and low clouds would prevent aircraft from finding their targets. Group Captain James Stagg of the Royal Air Force met Eisenhower on the evening of the 4th of June. He and his meteorological team predicted that the weather would improve enough for the invasion to proceed on the 6th of June. Can you imagine? You're the weather dude, and they're always wrong, right? Most of the time they're wrong. And they didn't have nearly the technology they deal with today. The next available dates with the required tidal conditions, but without desired full moon, would be 2 weeks later, 18 to 20 June. Postponement of the invasion would have required recalling men and ships already in position to cross the channel, would have increased the chance that the invasion plans would have been detected. After much discussion with other senior commanders, Eisenhower decided the invasion would go ahead on the 6th. A major storm battered the Normandy coast from 19 to 22 June, which would have made the subsequent window impossible. Allied control of the Atlantic meant German meteorologists had less information than the Allies on incoming weather. As the Luftwaffe Meteorological Center in Paris was predicting 2 weeks of stormy weather, many Wehrmacht commanders left their posts to attend war games, and men in many units were given leave. Rommel returned to Germany for his wife's birthday to meet with Hitler and to try to obtain more panzers. How about that? So you see, right? I want to say in the movie The Longest Day, there's a German soldier who's kind of taking a cow in a farm early in the morning to milk it or something. And he comes around a corner and he looks and he sees ships from as far as he can see. And, you know, so the Germans did not expect the landing. So just a little bit of background. I want to play for you the president's remarks that he made. And I don't know if you read the coverage of Donald Trump, it's not a normal Trumpian visit. He's like been well behaved, other than like fighting with selected people. But by all accounts, he seems to be acquitting himself well. And interestingly enough, somebody thought it was appropriate that he would read FDR's letter that FDR wrote to American forces that were going to participate in the invasion. So we'll give that a listen right now. Those are his footsteps as he walks to the podium. And the venue, if you haven't seen it yet, is it's like a huge arc of an aviation hangar. In the background is a huge American flag, a picture of it, and a picture of FDR next to it. And they're huge, right? And so the audience is sitting out in an uncovered area. There's a lot of people there. And President of the United States.
Almighty God, our sons, pride of our nation, this day have set upon a mighty endeavor, a struggle to preserve our republic, our religion, and our civilization, and to set free a suffering humanity. They will need thy blessings, for the enemy is strong. He may hurl back our forces, but we shall return again and again. And we know that by thy grace and by the righteous of our cause, our sons will triumph. Some will never return. Embrace these, Father, and receive them, the heroic servants, into thy kingdom. And, O Lord, give us faith. Give us faith in thee, faith in our sons, faith in each other, and faith in our united crusade. Thy will be done, Almighty God. Amen.
Franklin Roosevelt, his words on the on the eve of the Great Invasion of Europe. So 75 years ago. And, you know, it must be interesting for the president. I mean, he grew up, you know, how old is the president? Is he 75? He's young, right? I think he's 72. Donald Trump. Let's see, how old is he? He's 72 years old. So, I mean, his whole life, he's grown up in the shadow of World War II, right? So, so it must be very interesting for him to go be a part of something that has been really, you know, it was a dominant piece of American historical landscape for the, you know, probably the first half of his life easily, and probably the first two-thirds of his life, with World War II veterans dominating life as he grew up. So it must be interesting perspective from the president. Some headlines from Stars and Stripes. There's a today's Rangers scale Normandy cliff in honor of one of D-Day's boldest actions. Tomorrow, as I do on an annual basis, you'll hear an interview I did with a guy named Harris Holman, who went up those cliffs. And I met him by accident. The interview is completely by accident, and it's one of my favorite interviews that I've ever done with anybody ever. And Harris passed away before I could meet him, something I still regret to this day. But he was he's a Norwegian guy, and he talks with the Norwegian accent, and he tells a story about being a ranger and going up the cliffs at Point du Hoc, which is absolutely cool to listen to. And I talked to him, you know, I asked him, what was it like? What did you think when you were sitting on those, you know, landing craft? And he says, I didn't think I would make it. You know, I thought we would win, but I didn't think I would make it. And wounded three times. And met Patton. He also sees his brother on the beach at Normandy. His brother's a tanker. Sees his brother driving by, waves him down. So Rangers in Normandy reenacting the ascent of Rangers. Not really, though, because when you look at the picture, there's this kind of... It looks like some kind of rope-like ladder, but it's more of a net, right? And so that's rolled down the cliffs at Point du Hoc. That's not how they went up. They went up on ropes. Caption of the photo is, soldiers of the 75th Ranger Regiment climb up the 100-foot cliffs at Point du Hoc on the Normandy coast, much like their counterparts did on D-Day 75 years ago. In the background, on the left, is the Ranger Monument. So you can see out on the point of Point du Hoc is a monument there erected in tribute to the Rangers who went up Point du Hoc that day. So Rangers there. And they've actually got one of the Rangers with them that was that went up the cliff. Pretty cool. Pretty cool to see the Rangers in World War II uniforms, right? Soldiers of the 75th Ranger Regiment pose for a photo with D-Day veteran John Rain and Roy Enrique at Point du Hoc Ranger Memorial. The soldiers climb the 100-foot cliffs like the 5th Ranger Infantry Battalion did on D-Day 75 years ago. Pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. I've always loved this kind of stuff. But yeah, the interview with Harris Holman that you'll hear tomorrow is one of my favorites. And, you know, and I asked him, what'd you go up there armed with? We went up there armed with rifles and hand grenades. We were going to surprise him. Next headline, Stars and Stripes, is Navy raises traditional blue and white flags once again as it commemorates the Battle of Midway. Right, you've seen the flag, right? It's a series of white stars on a blue background. Why do they fly it, though? That's what I don't understand. So we'll get to the bottom of this. Courtesy of Stars and Stripes. The U.S. Navy officially switched to flying the Union Jack aboard its ships Tuesday, a move timed to coincide with the 77th anniversary of its role in the decisive Battle of Midway. During a ceremony commemorating the battle aboard the guided missile destroyer USS Chung Hoon at Joint Base Pearl Harbor, Hickam, the 50-star Union Jack was hoisted for the first time since 2002 when it was replaced by the first Navy Jack in response to the 9/11 attacks. And so, anyway. Next story. Russian fighter makes unsafe intercept of U.S. plane over the Med. So much in the news. Next story. 97-year-old World War II veteran parachutes over Normandy. You know, much of this is teaching younger generations that, you know, their freedom isn't free. And again, let me just tell you, when you have a totalitarian state and China, right, and Russia are that, and so is Iran, attempting to impose their will on free nations, you know, it's somebody better do something, lest you find yourself in that same position. And I don't care if the Chinese come with great smiles on their face handing out money. The free nations of this world are shirking their duties, right? And it's, and I'll tell you what, and the great display was, you know, the Queen and the President of the United States talking about the history of that relationship and how since 1945, the United States and the United Kingdom have worked together to ensure freedom around the world, or at least attempt that the rule of law internationally is respected. And they're the top two dogs in that, right? So it's a great reminder for all of us that, you know, again, freedom isn't free. So anyhow, all right, the top five stories in Early Bird, then we'll take a break. Then you're going to hear Jolynn Lee, right? So top five stories in Early Bird look like this today. Yeah, and when you look at this hour, check out the pictures from Camp Wilson last night. Top story, number one, SU-35 fighter makes irresponsible intercept of Navy P-8 over the Med. They do it all the time. They're idiots, okay? They're Russians. Guy's probably drunk. Number two, here's what the first few years of the U.S. Space Command might look like. That's right. That's designed to get all the Trekkies to click on it. Number three, cancer-causing foam could be banned in military training next year off bases entirely by 2029. Hello, you think? That story is unbelievable. Anyway, number four, do you believe in UFOs? China hints at test of new missiles. UFOs, man, I'm telling you. You're having a slow click day? Fire up the UFO propaganda and watch your numbers go through the roof. Number five, graphic novel spotlights action of Medal of Honor recipients who, even in a body bag, refuse to die. Here's an interesting story. Baghdad's Green Zone opens for the first time to the public in 16 years. Why does that make me uneasy? One more story. Acting Secretary of Defense Patrick Shanahan is not recommending punishments for higher level commanders for the ambush that killed four American soldiers in Niger a year ago, despite calls from some lawmakers and former officers to hold more senior personnel accountable for the ill-fated operation. Shanahan's a coward. He is a bobblehead. He's an acting dude. He's not a yes or no guy. He's not a leader, right? Somehow or other, he's good at contracts or whatever, but he should not be in that position. Let me tell you, when people die and nobody pays the price and they didn't insure, when they knew that people were hanging their ass out, that the right thing got done, and nobody's head rolls because of it, not a good thing. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, you're going to meet JoLynn Lee here on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio. Shanahan, man, get that guy out of there. He's a clown. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.